The government has done good work. They have ensured public safety and women's safety. There is no fear in villages. Nobody can pressure anyone.
India voters head to the polls. It's Wednesday, February 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Olympics technology concerns. Stressed China supply lines. Ukraine war threat. Pandemic risky behavior. New York's open streets. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Five states in India will choose new state governments this week, but all eyes are on the election in its most populous state. Uttar Pradesh, that pits Prime Minister Narendra Modi's party against a regional party. A victory here is seen as crucial for the ruling party ahead of national polls in 2024. Anjana Pasricha visited Uttar Pradesh and has this report.
As he checks out his voting credentials in Didoli village, Bablu Tyagi has made up his mind. He wants the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party to return to power in Uttar Pradesh.
Earlier, the roads in our villages were filled with potholes. Now they are much better. The government has increased prices of sugarcane, and farmers get a stipend of $150 every year.
A few kilometers away in a nearby town, many don't share that sentiment.
In Muradnagar, there has been no development. Everyone's business is hit. Children's education is affected. And young people are struggling to get jobs.
Polls in five Indian states that start this week are seen as a midterm verdict for Prime Minister Narendra Modi's BJP. The key test will take place in Uttar Pradesh, India's most populous state that is a political bellwether. Its main rival is a regional party. These rural communities had helped catapult the BJP to power 5 years ago on its promises of development, jobs and better incomes for farmers. But this time, the party is battling disenchantment in many villages in the sugarcane growing belt. Raj Singh took part in a year-long protest last year demanding the repeal of contentious agricultural laws. In a rare concession by Modi, the laws were scrapped, but Singh is still angry.
We don't get good prices for our crops. We don't get paid in time. Farmers and farm labor is devastated.
His discontent is echoed by old and young farmers. The lack of jobs makes it difficult to move out of agriculture, but high inflation has hurt their farming incomes.
Whether you take seeds, fertilizers, or electricity, prices have shot up. So our incomes have not kept pace with expenses. From that point of view, farmers are losers.
Some here also accuse the state's chief minister, Yogi Adityanath, a Hindu priest, of using religious issues to win votes of the majority Hindu community.
The BJP government has created a divide between Hindus and Muslims. We always lived like brothers.
The BJP says it treats all communities equally. It says it has restored law and order in a state with a high crime rate. Some agree.
Earlier, our animals used to get stolen and the police would do nothing. Now I can put my cattle out to graze the whole day without worrying. Even if I don't take them home at night, they remain safe.
The government has done good work. They have ensured public safety and women's safety. There is no fear in villages. Nobody can pressure anyone.
Which way these villages vote will influence the outcome in this primarily rural region. It's a verdict that will be crucial for Prime Minister Modi ahead of national elections in 2024. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Uttar Pradesh.
You'll find much more on India's elections at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. Also check us out at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Midterm test for Modi as India's most populous state prepares for polls. Cambodian minister says Myanmar junta chief said ASEAN envoy can meet Suu Kyi party members. Fearing junta, hundreds of Myanmar parents disown dissident children. Journalist who spoke to Peng Shui says doubts remain. How China got blue skies in time for Olympics. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more. Visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. At the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics, China is using technology to keep athletes and visitors safe as part of its pandemic precautions. But for visitors, the use of technology can come with security and privacy concerns. Michelle Quinn reports.
For four-time Olympian Chris Masder, the games this year are different thanks to the pandemic. There are no cheering crowds.
It is going to be strange not having that full Olympic atmosphere.
From the Olympic bubble, where athletes and visitors are monitored for COVID-19 and sleep, eat, and compete, separated from the rest of Beijing, the Olympics look a bit different and come with more technology because of the pandemic. But with technology comes privacy and security concerns, particularly in China.
Thank you.
Human rights groups have been critical of Beijing for its censorship of the internet and the digital surveillance of its citizens. Citing cybersecurity concerns, the FBI advised Olympic Village visitors to leave personal phones at home and use temporary ones. While the FBI's advice was broad, there's been long-standing concern that Chinese authorities track visitors' digital movements.
I think it's very important to take a clean device. Keep it clean while you're there. Keep your conversations to the point and simple. Don't reveal any personal information that the Chinese government could collect on you.
U.S. authorities have repeatedly accused China and other countries of using cyber attacks to steal information and engage in espionage. But a state-sponsored attack of the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics isn't likely, say cybersecurity experts, given China's close geopolitical relationship with countries including Russia and North Korea, where cyber attacks have originated. However, the U.S. agency warned that the Olympics could experience cyber attacks motivated by those seeking financial gain or by so-called hacktivists who want to highlight an issue.
An event like the Olympics on a global scale where the whole world is watching is really an ideal type of event for them to air their grievances.
Technology has played a key role in China's efforts to tamp down the spread of COVID-19 outside and inside the Olympic bubble. Robots are a mainstay inside the bubble. They make and deliver food, clean floors, all to help people maintain some physical distance. Visitors are required to install an app on their phones where they enter daily temperature and virus testing information. Test positive, and you are removed immediately from the games. A reported security flaw in the app has been fixed, Beijing Olympics authorities say, and only limited data is collected.
All data collection has strict guidelines clarified by the International Olympic Committee and the Beijing Olympics Organizing Committee after thorough discussion.
Chris Masder, the luge racer, told VOA before the games began that downloading the app was just something he had to do to compete.
I do believe in data privacy. I feel that I have nothing to hide or worry about on my phone.
As they strive to bring home medals, athletes are also working to protect themselves digitally. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
At the Beijing Olympics heading into competition today, Sweden leads the medals table with 4 gold medals, 1 silver and 1 bronze. The Netherlands is currently second in the official table ranked by gold medals. They have 3, along with 1 silver and 1 bronze. Host China has moved up to 3rd place with 3 gold and 2 silver. Russian athletes lead the overall tally with 10 medals. The United States has slipped to 17th place with 4 silver medals and 1 bronze, still looking for its first gold medal. Nathan Chen is in position to deliver it after setting a record-breaking performance in men's figure skating. American-born skier Eileen Gu made history Tuesday at the 2022 Winter Olympics with a gold medal win for China in the debut of the women's freestyle big air competition. Follow all of the latest Olympics news with us at voanews.com. Happening now in Asia, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has departed for Australia, where the State Department said he will attend Quad ministerial meetings to advance cooperation on maritime security and cybersecurity, also pushing back against aggression and coercion in the Indo-Pacific region. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's our pleasure to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. The most recent COVID-19 cases in China have put even more stress on an already strained supply chain, and that's causing delays in the shipping of everyday items to the United States. VOA's Elizabeth Lee shows what one business is doing to help alleviate the problem.
Young Schultz imports clothing and other goods from China that eventually end up at U.S. department stores. Before the pandemic, it took 3 weeks for her products to travel from China to her warehouse in Southern California. But now she says it takes an additional 45 days at least.
Yesterday, I just received an email. We have 5 containers supposed to sail in on January 22nd. However, they say, sorry, it will be February the 1st.
Supply chain experts say the delays will continue to be unpredictable, in large part because Omicron and Delta strains of the coronavirus have been detected in many Chinese provinces, including port cities. That, combined with China's zero COVID strategy of lockdowns and mass testing, are causing ripple effects in the global supply chain.
So before Omicron, and before some the latest lockdowns and partial lockdowns in China, global supply chains were already stressed and have been stressed for a couple of years. But this latest round of events there in China and Chinese ports has just added to what is already a very difficult situation.
And if one Chinese port closes, driving to another port isn't so simple.
In China, especially a bigger city, they don't welcome another city's resident to arrive because they believe if found outside, the risk is too high, so they do a quarantine 14 days minimum.
Even when the container ships arrive in the U.S., there are more delays.
There's a container shortage, but we also have shortage of workers here in warehouses, in trucking.
There is also a financial cost to the delays. For example, a container that used to cost $3,000 to $4,000 to ship is now more than $20,000. The Port of Los Angeles hasn't seen an impact from China's latest COVID cases, but
we are expecting a slowdown in February from China and other Pacific Rim countries because of the Lunar New Year. Whether the Omicron kicks that even further, we'll just have to wait and see.
Analysts say dependence on China for manufacturing has exacerbated the supply chain problem.
Companies are realizing, hey, what's now 2 years later, if I had taken action 2 years ago and looked at alternate sources of supply, maybe I would have been in a better position.
Don DiCostanzo, CEO of Pedego Electric Bikes, did just that. At the time, he looked to diversify where his bikes were made because of the tariffs for frames made in China, never expecting a pandemic would hit.
But the current crisis right now, we've mitigated by having steady flow of shipments coming from Vietnam, China, and Taiwan. They seem to have shutdowns at different points in time.
We've rented all these extra containers.
DiCostanzo is also keeping 4 months of inventory instead of 2. Amid the uncertainty over what COVID-19 will bring next, experts agree that 2022 will continue to bring supply chain disruptions and higher costs for consumers. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
Now that you've heard the story, you can see it. Find us on VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
This news from VOA Asia. The Biden administration is expected in the next several weeks to announce plans for an Indo-Pacific economic framework, marking the culmination of months of work to reinstate the United States as a counterweight to China and as a major player in developing the trade rules that govern the region. Find us on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Much more is ahead on VOA Asia. Right now, east of the capital, Kyiv, Ukrainians in the city of Dnipro are on the doorstep of the scene of a possible Russian invasion. A majority of the residents are native Russian speakers and identify with Russian culture. Ricardo Marquina traveled to the city to report for VOA on what the tensions have meant for them. Elizabeth Chernev narrates.
Dnipro is the last major Ukrainian city before the Donetsk and Luhansk regions, which in 2014 and 2015 were the scene of a separatist uprising promoted and supported by Russia. From this city, where most speak Russian, came many of the combatants who fought against the separatist forces. Many of them view the current crisis with concern.
Obviously, we are worried. We have already been through this. I fought until 2016. I am a sniper. I know what war is. We will survive.
The trauma of a war that has left thousands of victims now threatens to repeat itself. But here there is a calm, albeit a tense one, with many hoping that the threat from Moscow will not become a reality. Still, the city prepares for the worst, overhauling its old Soviet-era bunkers, which ironically were meant to protect citizens from a NATO attack.
This shelter is always ready. Periodically, we check the pipes, electricity, water, everything necessary to receive people when necessary.
Yet the city continues its normal rhythms despite the threats of a new war. The artists at the city's opera and ballet theater have not stopped their work for a single day, despite the anguish of having war yet again at their doorstep.
It is very hard. There are many Ukrainians who have relatives and friends in Russia, but the situation has developed like this. We have gotten used to this pain, and we live with it.
The tension generated by the months-long Russian troop buildup on the Ukrainian border has now passed into a moment of waiting, and with uncertainty as a backdrop, life goes on. For Ricardo Marquina in Dnipro, Ukraine, Elizabeth Chernev, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, a ban on Islamic headscarves at schools has prompted an outcry among Muslims in southern India, with large crowds taking to the streets to protest against the restrictions. The standoff has galvanized fears among the minority community about what they say is increasing persecution under the Hindu nationalist government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, U.S. traffic deaths and drug overdoses skyrocketed in 2021. VOA's Dora McCore examines how the pandemic might be prompting Americans to behave more recklessly.
A dramatic spike in traffic deaths. A record number of drug overdoses. As the COVID-19 pandemic drags on, there are distressing indicators that more Americans are engaging in risky behavior.
There is an effect from the pandemic. And certainly it has shown up in the way that we show up at work, the way we show up for our families, the way we are behind the wheel, and certainly the decisions we make when we have the choice to consume substances.
More than 38,000 people died on U.S. roads during the first year of the pandemic. That's the most since 2007.
We're seeing less use of seat belts, higher rates of speed on the roads. We're seeing greater use of substances, which affects how people are driving and the risks that they take when they're on the roads.
The pandemic has heightened job and economic uncertainty for many Americans. and impacted interpersonal relationships.
The ability to connect with other people in person has been limited. We're increasingly isolated.
A record number of people, more than 96,000, died of drug overdoses in the United States in 2021. That's a 30% jump over the previous year.
We know that substance abuse increased during the pandemic. A lot of people use alcohol and drugs to cope with the stress that we're experiencing. So some people were already having issues prior to the pandemic that got worse. And then some people who had no issues before experienced such high levels of the stress that they use substances to cope.
There are potential remedies. For example, the Johns Hopkins Center for Injury Research says traffic deaths can be mitigated if infrastructure money is used to take driver human error into account. For example, accident-prone four-way intersections can be replaced with traffic circles known as roundabouts. When it comes to substance abuse, the National Safety Council says U.S. employers should step up to increase job benefits to include more treatment and recovery services. But for now, this epidemic within a pandemic shows no signs of slowing down. Dora McQuar, VOA News, Washington.
New York City is starting to open up after the worst of the pandemic by implementing the Open Streets and Open Restaurants programs. These permanent year-round initiatives allow restaurants to spill out beyond their barricaded outdoor eating areas and into the streets. Nina Vishneva has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
Grilled chicken and a blackberry crumble for dessert. A candlelight dinner in the middle of a street.
You're allowed to eat here, you're allowed to sing here, and you're allowed to have a really good time because this is Brooklyn. So welcome to Brooklyn.
Mark Cohen, together with his daughter, have been organizing similar dinners for friends and family for a while. It is now possible in New York City, thanks to the city's Open Streets program. During the pandemic that is still very much a reality in the U.S., some streets have been locked off permanently to let people socialize safely and enjoy some fresh air.
If someone had come to our community board a year and a half ago and said, let's shut down all of Vanderbilt Avenue and just let people have dinner in the street and they can eat and drink here until, you know, 10 o'clock at night. We would have said, that's crazy. That's impossible. That'll never work. But it does work.
The streets and smaller squares are now blocked off and divided into several areas. Some are reserved for walking and biking, restaurants set up tables and others, while still others are empty, waiting to be turned into an improvised office space or playground. Restaurants are being allowed to use some city blocks for free, though they usually must pay a hefty sum and get a license to set up outside. City officials say in the first week of the Open Restaurants pilot program, twice as many people dined out than usual.
Also know we have a backstage, but nobody's in there. Everybody wants to be outside. And we have our COVID safety cabanas.
Patrick Fromas is the manager of the branded saloon restaurant. He says the venue didn't close during the pandemic, but they had 4 customers at most then. And now they're serving 65 people, and that's only outside.
And it's a big European vibe, but it's about to become an American vibe.
The program did appear to annoy some car drivers at first, and they organized rallies to protest the closing of certain streets. But as time passed, more people saw the appeal.
Some parking's hard, but what are you going to do? It's New York.
Viva Di Concini grew up in Arizona and was used to driving everywhere. But in New York, she enjoys being outdoors without having to drive.
And I love it. I love open streets. All my life, I used to go to Europe and I would see the pedestrian zones. You go to Las Ramblas and Barcelona and everything. And I always wanted to live on a street that was just pedestrian.
Now, most of the coronavirus restrictions in New York have been lifted, and the city is slowly and cautiously coming back to its pre-pandemic life. With one big exception, there are now many more streets closed to traffic and opened for socializing. For Nina Vishneva in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you joined us today. Continue with us online. You'll find us at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And of course, our website, voanews.com. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Kiskejo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.